This next guy needs no introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. He's here to present a look at what's trending in hardwood markets, both globally and here at home, is industry analyst and Hardwood Market Report editor, Judd Johnston. Far from being a stranger to HMA events, Judd and his Hardwood Market Report publication have been trusted sources of industry information for many, many years, and HMA is pleased that Judd was able to arrange his schedule to accommodate our event. To present information on domestic and global market trends, please join me in welcoming Judd Johnston.
Good morning. I want to thank Linda and the board for inviting me to participate in your meeting. I want to thank you for being here today. This has been an incredible session, great speakers, and now I'm going to be able to average that down a little bit. So I'm just a lumber guy. So thanks for being here. As you can see, the title of my presentation is U.S. Hardwood Market Trends, and I chose it because it fit pretty nicely on that slide, and it's also what you would expect me to talk about. But for full disclosure, what I'm going to talk about is key indicator performance, and that includes the market trends, as I show here. Also, we're going to talk about factors that influences those trends, and we're going to discuss, can I get some light, please? That's not nice. And the third thing, we're going to talk about circumstances that are currently in play that could possibly alter those trends. Now, Hardwood Market Report's approach to discuss market trends for North American hardwood lumber is to look at supply and demand independently, but supply and demand are really inseparable. If you've ever sat through one of my presentations before and were awake at the time, you heard me say supply is a product of demand. And maybe for some young people that have not sat through one of my presentations, let me say it officially that supply is indeed a product of demand. So since demand is superior to supply, we're going to begin with that part of the marketplace. And you're familiar with this. It's your business. The market for North American hardwood lumber is divided into two basic groups. There's the industrial group, and then there's the grade lumber group. In general, the grade lumber items generates higher revenue, or certainly value, than the industrial products. But here we see that the industrial group is a larger segment of the marketplace. Well, that wasn't the case not so many years ago, at least not so many years ago for me. 2005 doesn't seem like it was that long ago. At that point, the market was pretty much inverse what it is now, 60% grade, 40% industrial. And this graph shows us that transition from that period in 2005. It didn't transition overnight, but it was pretty rapid. And the change favoring the industrial market created some problems because it was imbalanced with the inherent quality of materials that are produced at a sawmill. And those differences between supply and demand weighed on values and margins for the producers. The good news, if you look at the right-hand side of this particular graph, is that the ratio seems to be trending back the other way in favor of grade lumber markets. The caveat to that good news, there always has to be a caveat to good news, is that this transition is occurring because of contracting industrial markets and only spotty growth in the grade lumber markets. So we're going to need to drill down and look at the market sectors individually that make up both of these groups. This pie chart represents the volume consumed by eight major market sectors that we identify and their percentage of the total marketplace. We're going to look at the sectors, try to discuss items that influence those results. But before that, I want to establish a framework for this discussion by just bringing out two things. There are overarching factors that influence the results. Thank you. And they are the economy and residential construction. We just sat through and listened to the economy, and that was an incredible presentation. To be clear, these aren't the only two things that influence your business, but the economy is absolutely inseparable from your results. And we think it is reasonable to assume that the housing market has a direct and meaningful influence on your business. Now, for anybody who's looking for hard data to make a correlation, you know, how does housing influence our business, there is no hard data. But if you want to go back and look at your sales from 2003 to 2006 and compare those sales to 2009 to 2011, I think that the results will be pretty evident. Or you could take the easy way out and just quote Bob Dylan, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind's blowing. As far as the economy is concerned, there's been very moderate growth, or what we would call very moderate growth, since it bottomed out in 2009. I think it's also fair to say that the growth has been uneven in the sectors of our economy and geographically across our country. The biggest winners since 2009, the way I see it, is centers of political and financial power and energy. But the most important thing that we need to keep in mind as far as this graph is concerned in the economy is that it grew. When we talk about the economy, we typically talk about the U.S. economy or the U.S. and Canada's economy, but we can't do that anymore. Our markets have changed, and they're going to continue to change. So I'd like for you to think of this chart as opportunity for your business and opportunity for our industry. And if you pay particular attention to emerging and developing Asia, which is at the top right column, you'll see China and India. China continues to be a very rapidly expanding market for your products. And India also has 1 billion-plus people and an economy growing at 7%, which opens up the potential for great opportunity for your products to go into furniture and fixtures that will go into their economy over time. U.S. housing market. Home ownership in the United States is at the lowest level since 1965. Well, that's not good. After 5 consecutive years of increasing, single-family permits, starts, and completions are now only reaching, just edging a little bit past, the 1981-1982 recession level. So that's not very good either. But I want to flip that conversation around a little bit and say the very same thing I said before. Single-family construction has increased in each of the last 5 years. That's the longest stretch of consecutive increases in housing starts, at least since 1959. That's the data series that's available. What's more, it's increased at a meaningful rate. If we consider that the supply grid, which means your business, other industries that supply the housing market, adjusted down to the low level of demand from 2009 to 2011. When we began to get the increases in 2012, they were large percentage increases, and they were meaningful to your business. Lastly, and probably the most important thing to consider about the housing market, is the upside potential. We see where we are on a historic level. We've got a lot more to grow, and if we did an average from 1959 to 2016, I think we're a little less than 40% of what that average is now. So we've got upside potential, and the encouraging thing about that is the largest segment of our population, which is now the millennials, are of age. They're buying houses. So there's some very positive news I see in the housing market. Wells Fargo Security, along with other analysts, project continued growth this year and next year in housing starts. In the case of Wells Fargo, as you see in this graph, the last 2 bars to the right, the outlook is for gains of 6.3% this year, 4.8% next year. Both of those numbers are very solid growth, but also those are manageable. That's manageable growth, too. That should keep inflationary pressures mild, which will help keep housing affordable. The starts and completions shown on this graph are the same that you saw on the previous graph. But if you would, take note of the construction that's in process. That's in the that's a really ugly color background. At the end of last year, there were approximately 7 months' worth of construction that was in process. So that's 7 months of additional demand for interior fittings and furnishings without adding an additional start. Here's another look at the in-process construction. You'll note that there's some seasonal aspects to this. We're familiar with that with housing. But clearly, there's an upward trend. The blue graph line represents the housing units that are under construction. The red graph line includes housing under construction plus housing units that have been permitted and not yet started. So at the end of January this year, there were 425,100 units that were under construction, various stages of construction. there were an additional 66,800 units that had been permitted but not yet started. So that pushed that red line for January to 491,900 units. Now, if we remember that single-family housing completions last year totaled 737,900 units, and if we divide that by the units that are under construction, we have 8 months' worth of construction in process. February's numbers came out too late for me to include this, but both of those numbers are up for February. The rate of completions in February actually was lower than the rate of completions last year. So if we were to extend that blue line and talk about February, we would say the blue line, units under construction, we have 8 months worth of completions to go. And the red line would be 9.6 months worth of construction work yet to go. All right, we looked at the units, and now I like to look at the money. I think money's the most important thing here. Private expenditures on residential construction in the United States represent 99% of all residential construction here. The private expenditures on new single-family housing run at about $250 billion a year. Remodeling is holding very steadily at $150 up to $160 billion a year. The important thing about the remodeling numbers that we're showing here is that they are on major projects for owner-occupants of single-family housing. So that's $400 billion a year invested in single-family construction, plus whatever the hardwood industry might capture from the $60 billion from condos and multifamily construction. So that's a strong driver for your business. All right, now onto the markets themselves. We're going to begin with the industrial group. Included in this group are wooden pallets and containers, railway ties, board roads, mat timbers. You're very familiar with that. Two of these three market sectors actually contracted last year from 2015. And in fact, the estimated volume for hardwoods consumed by the board road mat timber has declined in each of the last 3 years. And the first half of the year last year was a bit unusual. The year started off actually with some strength. It looked like it was going to carry, gain traction and have momentum. Our estimate of consumption by this market sector at the middle point of last year was up about 5% from 2015. As it ended, it was down about 3%. So that was, in our estimation, that was about an 8% change. So whatever momentum it had the first half of the year fizzled out in the second half of the year. So certainly there are hardwood producers that have ongoing business in board road and mat timber. Some of them have done very well with that. But for most hardwood sawmills, demand ranges for this material ranges somewhere between being flat and non-existent. This is the one market sector that in the industrial group that did post an increase in 2016 over 2015. For no more additional volume than it was, statistically, we would say that it was pretty much the same as 2015. But the statistics for the year really don't match the reality of the marketplace. Railroads and treating companies began contracting purchases in 2016. Now, the reason the railroads and treaters began to aggressively reduce their purchases is to correct inventories after overpurchasing. There are some that simply have changed their purchasing from inventory expansion to inventory maintenance. That changes the rate of purchases too. The challenges that we're seeing now increasingly, those target inventories are very fluid. They continue to change. So once again, the facts tell us that the railroad business is very sound, and the industry may very well consume or use an installation somewhere close to a billion board feet in 2017. But the reality for hardwood producers is that the tie purchases are down, and they're down at a time when demand has decreased from other industrial markets. The pallet industry. The next two sentences that I say may be the most significant things I say in this presentation, so I'm going to try to get this right. The wooden pallet and container industry accounts for nearly 40% of the total marketplace for U.S. hardwood lumber. There's no other established market alternative for this much volume of this quality material. This is what makes the pallet industry so important to business health for hardwood sawmills and to overall supplies. The pallet industry follows closely with the economy, but if you see this, in 2015 and 2016, consumption by the pallet industry declined. So why was this? Well, if we go back to the 2012 to 2014 period, when demand was surging for everything, Board Road mat timber business was surging, tie business was certainly surging. There was a great deal of competition for that, particularly for that part of the log. Prices increased for pallet material, but they increased for ties and Board Road mat timber. And pallet material was pretty much at the bottom end of the rung. So even after paying higher prices, the pallet industry did not get the volume they needed. Consequently, they substituted hardwoods with softwoods. So once business is lost, it's very difficult and takes time to recapture market share from lower prices. The challenges with the pallet industry, the issues now are much more than just price. Earlier I said that the pallet industry follows the economy, and I put together this graph as a demonstration really for my own benefit, which sort of substantiates me being the most boring person I know. The difference between the economy and volumes consumed in 2009 and 2012 in this demonstration is a reflection of contracted sawmill production and increased demand for Board Road mat timbers and cross ties. The difference between the economy and volumes consumed from 2014 to present is a result of lost market share from softwood. In this demonstration, 2016, we're talking about 641 million board feet. Now, the pallet industry, the results are going to vary among everybody in this room. They vary for sawmills. But I can tell you this, that 19.6% lost market share looks pretty ridiculous to a hardwood sawmill that lost 100% of their business to softwoods. All right, thanks goodness we're done with the industrial group. The trends are more positive for the grade lumber group as a whole. At the same time, they're not as good as what we might think given the housing market and our economic growth. In fact, estimated consumption by the furniture industry actually decreased last year. It's a little bit better look at the furniture sector. There was a clear increase in 2013, which you're going to see is consistent with other markets. We had a nice bump up from 2012 when the market was contracted. But since then, business has been pretty flat in comparison to our economy and housing market. Molding millwork, even though molding and millwork posted an increase, a nice percentage increase in 2016 over 2015, it still hasn't kept up with the rate of growth in the housing market. There was a sharp increase in volume in 13 from 2012, but since then things have been fairly moderate growth. Exact same thing for the cabinet industry. The volumes consumed are up, but not by very much. The flooring market sectors did better last year than the other market sectors. Volumes consumed in 2016 were up a robust 9.2%. However, if you can see that 2016 is actually up from a contracted 2015, and there are a few reasons for that. Again, going back to 2013, you see this inventory surge that occurred. That inventory surge carried over into 2014 and probably into 2015 a little bit. Another reason is the increased rate of housing that we've seen. The housing starts don't translate equally to completions within the same calendar year. Actually, it wasn't until last year until we saw some really significant growth in completions. Then the other challenge to the flooring industry would be raw material demand has been affected by competition in the marketplace for manufactured goods. Solid hardwood flooring is competing very heavily against engineered wood flooring, but also non-wood materials. And if you want an overarching answer, what are our challenges with our domestic grade lumber markets, it would be exactly that we've lost market share to alternative materials. Well, that doesn't seem to be the case for exports, or at least it doesn't show in these statistics. Exports increased 11.2% last year over 2015 and reached a new record high. Now, it's only 0.4% higher than 2014, the previous record high, but a record's a record, and we're going to take that. Anybody have any surprises where your lumber went when you exported it? There's actually a lot of information in this. The first thing you're going to see is China, but I think the most important thing to see is what everybody else is doing. This was a graph that I had. I kind of put it in the presentation at the last minute. The information on the right for 2016 is a little dated. It was earlier in the year, but it is representative of the marketplace. In the final numbers for 2016, China accounted for 51% of all U.S. hardwood exports, which includes Canada. Included in that figure, China purchased 71% of all red oak that was exported, 75% of all ash that was exported, 37% of the poplar, 30% of white oak. This is our history of exporting hardwood lumber to China. I also think it represents China's development into a capitalist economy. There's not another China in the world, not that has the same population and a unified social structure. It's a communist government. They can get things done a lot faster than our government, that's for sure. Now, we all know at some point in time the trajectory of growth in China is going to level off, but I don't believe we're at that point yet. So these are the market sectors in your business that your business relies on. We're seeing contraction in the industrial group, moderate growth in domestic grade lumber sectors, and we're seeing vibrant export activity, but most all of that's being driven by China. Our economy is doing well or better than last year, so that's a positive influence. Additionally, there's a substantial amount of construction in process, and forecasters tell us that housing starts are going to continue to grow over the next couple of years. So the two of the primary drivers of your business are trending in the right way. The challenges facing the supply side of the market this year is to balance production with growing demand for grade lumber without exceeding decreasing demand for industrial products. And that's not going to be an easy task, but that's not the only thing that you're going to have to concern yourself with. Production also can be affected by loggers' inability to sell pulpwood and sawmills' inability to sell chips and residual wood waste. Now, this is a survey that I did. It was a very fast survey, and I must tell you that the numbers on these graphs that you're going to see are absolutely inconclusive, but it is representative. I was able to share this information with a group formerly known as the Millennial Council a few weeks ago, and I try to make clear to them that this is just representative of the circumstances. However, the results returned from this came from most of them were sawmills, and what we saw with these challenges that it's the sawmills indeed that are having problems. This is the reverse side of that, and we see there were 100% of the secondary manufacturers had zero problems with wood waste. Well, I know firsthand that that's not true. I know secondary manufacturers that are having problems with their wood waste. But again, this is just the people that bothered to respond to the quick survey that we did. The other interesting thing about this that the numbers don't show, of the 31% of the sawmills that said they were not having trouble, almost every one of them agreed that they were vulnerable because they only had either one customer for dust or one customer for chips. This is what the survey really tells us, is that the challenges that are associated with residuals is a sawmill problem. Here are the reasons that we were given, those people that bothered to respond. The first reason that they gave was low-cost fossil fuels, in particular natural gas. Associated with that, which was the third most frequently mentioned item, was unusually warm temperatures. And then we had people mention decrease in pulp and paper production, and associated with that, the last one was we just have fewer markets than before. Despite all the challenges that were associated with residuals, there were some mills and some secondaries and some yards that posted very favorable results with that. And the summary of this information tells us that yards are either consuming or able to sell the residual wood waste that they have. Some of the sawmills are doing really good business with bark mulch. And anybody doing business with animal bedding had really good results for that. So let me again stress that these are inconclusive, but they are an indicator of those circumstances. Moving on, this is a map from the U.S. Forest Service depicting pulpwood consumption as of 2008. There have been some plant closings, we all know, since 2008, so this map isn't completely accurate. It is the most current one that I could find. Nonetheless, the map does illustrate where pulpwood is processed. And in those areas of consumption, log and timber sales are dependent upon local pulpwood markets. what's occurred over the past few years is a general decline in pulpwood consumption in the South Central and the Southeast states. 2 weeks ago, I was in at a New England Lumbermen's Association meeting, and what I learned there, the state of Maine has experienced a severe reduction in pulpwood production. So I'll mention Maine in here as well. Also important to hardwoods, there's been a substantial shift in pulp production that enables the manufacturers to use more softwoods and less hardwoods. So decreased demand and prices for hardwood, pulpwood, and chips affected log sales and timber harvest last year. At times, there were some sawmills that had difficulty getting enough saw logs to operate their planned schedules. And those conditions haven't improved since then. This is neat. The U.S. Forest Service recently has developed some impressive numbers about southern forests. Included is the fact that the South forests are only 2% of global forest cover, but they produce 12% of the world's industrial roundwood. Also, primary wood processing plants in the South accounted for 74% of the nation's pulpwood production in 2011. I don't know of anything that's changed fundamentally that would alter that 74%. Now, this commentary is about the resource, it's not about the producers. If you have operations that or do business within this 13-state area from Texas to Virginia, this is your wood basket. If you're not in there, it may seem irrelevant to you, but at some level, the fiber that comes from here is competing against you and it's competing against your suppliers. If this is your wood basket, markets for pulpwood, chips, industrial lumber products, wood fuel, they all matter to your business. And the same products matter to people in other places too. A significant and growing amount of electricity is generated by U.S. Biomass. Much of that biomass is in the form of densified biomass fuel. That's what the government calls it. You and I call it wood pellets. And here's where the wood pellets are manufactured in the United States. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, about 85% of the raw materials for biomass pellets come from wood waste streams such as logging residues, sawmill residues, wood product manufacturing residues. Roundwood harvested for industrial use accounts for only about 15% of the raw materials. The Energy Information Administration survey collected data from 120 planned and operational densified biomass manufacturing facilities in the United States. These facilities have the capacity to produce 11.4 million tons each year. So I ask the question, does wood fuel matter to your business? Here's more fun facts about wood pellets you didn't know that you wanted to learn. Utility-grade pellets used by electric utilities account for more than 75% of total pellet marketplace. Premium pellets, which are used for residential and commercial heating, make up the rest of the market. During the first half of 2016, 82% of pellet sales were utility pellets for exports. This graph shows you where those export markets are. This graph is actually confusing. What this is a map of Europe, and it's a map of Europe in February of this year. The colors that you see that are brown and red indicate temperatures, areas where temperatures were above normal. The blue areas where temperatures were below normal, the white areas were about average. So looking at this and thinking over the last 2 years, did El Nino and La Nina reduce wood pellet consumption? Probably so. Have low-cost fossil fuels, particularly natural gas, affected wood fuel demand? I would say not only probably so in both cases, I would say absolutely yes they have. So if this is the case, if we've seen this reduction, then demand for wood pellets can actually increase with normalized temperatures and or higher market prices for fossil fuels. So if you want to play along with me, thinking along that, if 2015 and 2016 were actually anomalies, then maybe the demand trajectory for wood pellet exports is set at that 2015 level. And the arrow might indicate where demand would have been in 2016. Or maybe this, if the base demand was even as high as the 2014 level, that's where demand would have been in 2016 under normal conditions. So all of this is, if all of this is true, export markets would have the potential of 20 to 40% more volume than was actually shipped last year. Now, admittedly, this is speculative thinking, but it's certainly something for us to consider. So yes, there are challenges with pulpwood, there's challenges with chips, residual materials developing from primary, secondary manufacturing processes. These challenges are in addition to the declining demand for industrial lumber and timber. Combined, these challenges have the potential to disrupt sawmill production at a time when demand for grade and hardwood lumber is increasing. In fact, we saw quotas on pulpwood chips, wood fuel, frame stock lumber, mat timbers, pallet cans, and cross ties. They've actually already prevented some planned increases in sawmill production. And we saw that happen last year in the second and early part of the third quarter. But interestingly enough, in spite of all this disruption we had and challenges, Eastern U.S. hardwood production has actually remained fairly steady for the past couple of years. And I would say that's a very strong commentary about the overall market health for the products that you manufacture. I also say that it's something that your customers ought to value because, after all, buyers have to have suppliers. So to conclude, we see the marketplace as being a little oversupplied based on these estimates, but it's not oversupplied across the board. Excesses of industrial products account for most of the imbalances, and there are also certain grades that are in tight supply. What will happen to the supply imbalance if contracted industrial and residual markets force cutbacks in sawmill production? The potential for supply disruption, that's another speculative thing, but it's fair for us to discuss in this forward-thinking conversation that we're having. In fact, there are some lumber buyers today in this room that answered this question earlier this year by maintaining purchases at a time when their lumber inventories would suggest that they could cut back their purchases. However, most lumber buyers, it is my belief, have given little or no consideration about the challenges that are out there and possibly what could happen. So I'm going to conclude by simply saying that if you're not preparing for these challenges, then it's important to at least be aware of the challenges. So I want to thank you for your time. I don't know if we have time for questions or comments, but anybody have anything? Yes. Not substantially. I think we're looking at, there's certainly potential. There are projects planned and approved. I think it's going to be a while before we see that happen. I think something else that's happened with Board Road mat timber business, when this thing really exploded in 2008, production was coming from everywhere. And I think the supply side of that is much more consolidated now. And it's not that it won't be impactful if we see a big surge in demand. It certainly will. But I think the production of those products will be more consolidated than what it was seven, eight years ago. Other questions, comments? Again, thank you for your time.